Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us today. And after about 6 weeks of talking about which health plan is best for you, the open season is finally over. Hope you made some choices, did some wise shopping, and saved some money, and obviously stay healthy next year. Now we're going to get back to our Follow the Money routine. I have three very good guests today. Jessica Clement from the Federal Managers Association is going to give us the federal employee organized federal employees' viewpoint on what's going on the Capitol Hill. Then Steve Losey and Sean Riley from the Federal Times are going to bring us some unique insights about what's happening in Congress, in government, with things like transit subsidy, the Postal Service, you name it, and we've got it. So, Jessica, are you on the line?
I'm here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us today. I hope you're getting overtime these days. Have you ever known?
That's one way of looking at it.
Yeah, and you know, you've been around quite a while, despite your young years. Have you ever seen it this tough?
I really haven't. Now, I know compared to some in the federal community, I've only been doing this a short time. Compared to others, they probably think of me as the veteran. But I've been working on these issues for over 6 years now, and Mike, I tell you, every day I come into work and I'm like, I'm going to get X, Y, and Z crossed off my to-do list. This has been put on the back burner for 2 months, and all of a sudden somebody in Congress drops another bill and they schedule another vote, and everything I plan to do that day goes right out the window.
Well,
it's the worst environment for federal employees.
Have such a tough time here tracking it, and we've got specialists in every field, and I'm sort of the columnist, and we all say, is this for real? Did I dream this?
Right.
You know, so I want to ask you before we get to some details. This should be the good that should come out of a year like this for organizations like FMA and for federal unions and associations and NARF and whatnot is that this should serve as a wake up call to a lot of people, and maybe they'll decide to join a union or join an organization or join an association. Do you have any sense that people are doing that, or are they just sitting back and taking it?
Well, I can speak from an FMA perspective. We've certainly seen an uptick in members in 2011, but I also fear that some of our organizations are going to take a hit with so many people being eligible or near eligible to retire. And I hear from people all the time, you know, if Congress moves forward with a high three to high five or changes to my retirement, I'm out the door, you know. And then our organizations, you know, some of us who don't necessarily represent federal retirees but have retirees as members, you know, we may see a decrease as well, because I think, as Steve Losey reported actually earlier this week, that I'm sure you guys will talk about next, retirements are up and they are going to keep going up, and that is going to hurt a lot of our organizations.
Well, it seems to me, too, that it's a generational thing, that older people oftentimes appreciate unions, know what they do, and belong to them, and a lot of younger people don't see a need for them or don't quite understand what they're doing. So I would think with this wave of this buildup of retirements that probably a lot of union members are going to retire, and if they're replaced at all, they'll be replaced by people who don't care about joining associations or unions, or who actively loathe them.
I think you hit the nail on the head, if they're replaced at all.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And I think that's the most important thing is, you know, The way Congress is treating federal employees right now, everyone's so scared about what they're going to do. And this is, you know, this is exactly obtaining the goals of some in Congress. Now they can reduce the size of the workforce through attrition without having to pass any bills doing so, because they know people are just going to leave anyway.
It seems to me that, again, you need a scorecard to keep track of these, but we had the Bowles-Simpson Commission appointed by the White House, made a number of recommendations. A lot of people said it was statesmanlike. Congress was supposed to vote up or down on it. Didn't. You had the Vice President Biden's Blair House group of House, Senate, Executive Branch. They were supposed to come up with recommendations that Congress would deal with. They didn't.
Nope.
You've had a number of these. Now you have the Peterson group coming out, and they're taking in ideas from all of these other commissions. Of course, the super committee that was going to solve all of our problems and have an up or down vote, as it did with BRAC, with the base realignment and closing, it fizzled. So where are we now? I mean, it seems to me I'm seeing and reading the same thing over over and again, but maybe coming in a different direction or tied to a different issue.
Absolutely. Well, if Congress wants to prevent sequestration, they have until the end of next year to come up with at least $1.2 trillion in savings. So, you know, in order to prevent those automatic across-the-board cuts to defense and every other agency, they have to act on a deficit reduction plan by the end of next year. Otherwise, the cuts start taking effect January 1, 2013. So, of course, you know, as a federal employee lobbyist, we're very nervous as to what that means for federal employees. You know, federal employee pay and benefits was definitely on the table in Simpson-Bowles, from what we understand, was part of the Biden talks. The president put changes to federal retirement in his plan to the super committee. We know the super committee was talking about it. So I feel like, you know, feds in a way have dodged bullet after bullet after bullet, but they're not going to be so lucky maybe the next time or, you know, two times from now. So first you have that. And now you have, on top of that, a payroll tax holiday that members of Congress seem to agree needs to be extended, but they're disagreeing on how. And Republicans seem, and I apologize for generalizing because not all Republicans voted for the bill last night and not all Democrats voted against it, but the bill that came out from Representative Dave Camp that the House voted on last night to extend the payroll tax holiday did so on the backs of federal employees, froze the pay for another year, and made substantive changes to their retirement plans. All that amounts to for federal employees is a take home is a loss in take home pay when everyone else in the country is getting a 2% tax break. To me, that doesn't seem logical.
Well, I think too that to be fair, when you look at a lot of these proposals, the Republicans are taking a hit, particularly from the unions who complain about their anti-federal attitude. But then the Democratic side and from the White House, you had the 2-year pay freeze,
right?
And you had suggestions from the White House and from the Bowles committee to make various changes in federal benefits. So if they're looking for a safe haven, it's not there, is it?
It's not. And we've had that conversation with, you know, many members of Congress and within the federal employee community, all the federal employee groups these days, the management associations, the unions, the retirement groups, we've all kind of banded together to try and put forth, you know, one cohesive message. You know, giving middle-class Americans a 2% tax break should not be done on the backs of other middle-class federal employees.
Well, I'm going to ask you what you think's driving this. Starting really last August, in fact, you and I were at a seminar together when somebody brought in a newspaper. It was a front-page story, and it was Bill Bransford of Shaw Bransford, and he said, "This is not good." And it was a story saying that federal workers were paid more than their counterparts in the private sector. That was picked up by a number of news organizations. Mm-hmm. There were follow-up stories that said feds are paid more in the same jobs.
Yep.
You know, at every measure, every time one of these stories came out, it said that feds are living off the fat of the land, and they were getting a lot of backup help from a conservative think tank here in Washington.
Right.
So that set a tone.
And but even the conservative think tank some of these days will contend that there are federal employees who are also underpaid compared to their private sector counterparts. I mean, the article you referenced actually first started in December 2009.
Okay.
That's when we really started this battle. It was the first article saying feds are paid too much money, you know, compared to their private sector counterparts, and it was all data manipulation on the part of the publication that put that article out. But it was front page news, and I was quoted, so I kind of kept an eye on the comments that were made on the website. They had, you know, thousands of comments. Mike, I got hate mail like you wouldn't believe. There is this vitriol in the country towards federal employees that I can't seem to understand.
Well, I was going to ask you with the current Congress today, the makeup of it is as it is today, and we've got an election coming up in November of next year, but do you, and I know you're not psychic, you're not a mind reader, but do you sense that a lot of these members of Congress, when they're going after, they want to freeze federal pay for another year or two or three. They want to cut the formula to make annuities less generous. They want to, go to a variety of things, go from a high 3 to a high 5. Do they really believe this is necessary and it's worthwhile and it's fair, or are they driven by some kind of hatred of government and government workers?
I think it's both. I think for some of the more moderates out there, they say, okay, it's another year pay freeze. It's not, you know, it's not a 3-year, which was really killed in the Senate. Only 20 senators voted for that bill. You know, this is okay. You know, some say this is okay. I think others, there's this mentality that government is too big, it's broken, and we have to fix it. But to them, the way to fix it is to just, you know, continually pound on federal employees and decrease agency budgets. You know, one of the pieces of this conversation that I think frequently gets left out is that agencies carry out the programs that are mandated by Congress. When Congress doesn't give them the funding to hire people to do those jobs, those programs don't go away until Congress makes them go away. These are congressionally mandated programs that agencies have to carry out. How do you expect agencies to do that when you're constantly decreasing their budgets and, you know, cutting 10% of the federal workforce, which in essence makes government run more inefficiently, which I think is a self-fulfilling prophecy for some of these guys.
I want to ask you about reinventing the wheel when we come back from a break here on WFED 1500 AM.
How is the U.S. Air Force improving financial information and achieving audit readiness? What is the U.S. Air Force doing to improve its financial operations, become more efficient, and control costs? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with Dr. Jamie Morin, Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Financial Management and Comptroller, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
You hear the sounds of hammers and saws, but it's also the sound of freedom and independence. Across America, people are supporting Homes for Our Troops build specially adapted homes for our severely injured veterans. Now, it's your turn to help Sergeant Stephen Kiernan, who lost both legs while serving in Iraq. He volunteered to protect our freedom. You can volunteer your time, donate materials, or make a cash donation to this effort. Visit homesforourtroops.org or call 866-7-TROOPS.
Hi, this is Carl Alsner of the Washington Capitals.
The green light for the linesman. Adam into the Washington zone. Coming down low, the shot, save made, that's it. Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, Buffalo. The Capitals with a win in the shootout, 4-3 over the Sabres.
Catch every minute of Caps hockey right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and online at federalnewsradio.com.
My family struggled, and it was assumed that while I would go to college, I would have to pay for it myself.
Charlie wasn't sure how to get the money she needed for college. Then she found out about federal student aid and the FAFSA.
I don't think I quite realized what a huge deal actually graduating was. Federal student aid definitely made that happen.
Need help planning and paying for college? Find out more at college.gov.
My name is Charlie, and this is my story.
Previously on the Fed's telework panel discussion, sponsored by HP and Intel, Danette Campbell, the senior advisor of telework at USPTO, spoke to the current state of telework at USPTO.
Our existing telework program provides us with the ability to continue some everyday business operations during an emergency beyond those that are defined in the COOP plan. And during this February 2010 snowstorm, our Trademark Assistance Center continued to answer public inquiries better, actually, than the average performance for the previous quarter.
Work is something you do, not somewhere you go. Learn about the future of telework in the federal government at fedstelework.com. Read more on telework resources and get connected with Feds Telework on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. If you missed the Feds Telework panel discussion on Federal News Radio, you can listen on demand at fedstelework.com on the issues directly affecting federal employees and the way they do business. Learn about the future of telework at fedstelework.com. fedstelework.com.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. Please join me this week for my very special guest, Scott Hamburger, co-president and chief executive officer of Fortessa, a leading international designer, developer, and marketer of upscale tableware products. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
For 125 years, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth of our nation's capital and its surrounding communities. Your support will help over 21,000 youth who need you most walk through the doors of a Boys and Girls Club and walk out with a plan for their future. Every dollar donated in fiscal year 2012 will be matched up to $250,000 by Stanley Martin Homes. You can help. Go online to www.bgcgw.org and change someone's life. This message is brought to you by GEICO.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Jessica Clement. She is legislative director for the Federal Managers Association. And, Jessica, you worked on Capitol Hill before joining FMA, correct?
I did. I was on the Hill for almost exactly 3 years.
So you work both sides of the aisle, know how it works. One thing that fascinates me and sometimes horrifies me is the congressional ability to reinvent the wheel in a very short period of time. The big outsourcing surge started with the Clinton administration, and so many what they called overhead jobs were farmed out to the private sector to reduce federal mm-hmm. employment. Then when President Obama, and it was followed by the Bush administration, then President Obama came in and said, what we've got to do is insource these jobs, mm-hmm. the ones that are inherently governmental. And at one point, I believe they were talking about bringing as many as 150,000 jobs back into the government, but I assume that's dead now.
Well, I think it all depends on how you look at it. You know, federal employees, even when you take into account the benefits, are on average going to be cheaper than contractors in most positions. So you bring these jobs in-house, you're probably saving the government millions of dollars. On the flip side, when members of Congress look at the roles of the agencies, they're going, why are these agencies growing so big? We're growing government. Government's too big. What consistently gets left out of the conversation when we talk about the size of government is the number of contractors. In FY10, the contractor payroll for the United States government was $535 billion. The federal civilian payroll was $167 billion. So we are spending almost three times as much on contractors as we are on federal employees.
Yeah, that's one of those two. When you're inevitably counting apples and oranges and these different things. But it seems to me that what I was interested in, I believe it was last week, Representative Daryl Issa, who's chairman of that critical House committee and has not been exactly an automatic friend of federal workers, but he came to their defense and he said, when people talk about these things and complain about federal workers and federal programs, they need to be reminded that federal workers don't initiate a single one of these plans or programs or mandates, that it's the Congress that tell, for instance, the Congress writes the tax laws.
Right.
The IRS may interpret them, but Congress writes them. And how do you get that message over?
I mean, we're trying the best we can, but there are some members of Congress who don't even want to listen. They just say, you know, they throw their hands up at it. You know, they say the Obama administration has added 200,000 jobs since he took office, and this is bad business. The government's too big. And it doesn't matter why we added those jobs or if we converted them from contractors to federal employees or the fact that 90% of those jobs went to only four agencies, all of which deal with national defense. You know, that doesn't matter to these guys. And those are the ones whose minds we're never going to change. It's the more reasonable, the ones in the middle, you know, that we're trying to meet with and sit down and say, hey, you know, some of the views on federal employees are really misguided, and here's why they're wrong. I mean, that's almost what I do sometimes, you know, for an entire day.
Well, this sequestration thing that hangs over us, automatic cuts, but as you emphasized, it doesn't take effect until the end of next year, right? 2012.
January 1, 2013.
Okay.
Yep.
So we got a year to go, and this is going to be an incredibly long year because it's not only an election year, as mm-hmm. we have every 2 years, but it is a presidential election year.
Yep.
And I mean, that's got to dominate what happens between now and then with federal workers. What's your prediction? Not what you hope, but what do you think?
As I told my board last night, I think things are going to get worse before they get better. This is an election year, and you're going to see a lot of cheap shots taken at federal employees who are being blamed for our nation's economic problems when they really didn't have anything to do with it. I'm really nervous about what 2012 is going to bring for federal employees, and I think, you know, everyone should be paying attention. And, of course, the people listening to your show right now are, you know, they know what's going on. They listen to you because they want to stay involved. And I would encourage those listening to turn to their neighbor who maybe isn't listening to the program and say, hey, you know, we need to be paying attention to what's going on in Congress right now.
Well, some of these things that Congress is talking about, and again, we've been on the brink, by my count, four times this year, and with another one coming up,
yep.
Maybe Friday. What are these things that are pending now have a fixed date on them? For instance, I've heard a number of people say, I'm going to get out before it happens.
Yep.
And A, do they need to get out, or will these things be set with a prospective implementation date?
My members ask me that all the time. You know, should I retire? Should I retire? I'm really nervous about what Congress is going to do. I'm not a retirement expert. You know, I'm not equipped to give you retirement advice. But what I can say is that it is incredibly likely Congress will be making changes to federal employee pay and benefits. And all of us in the federal community are working very, very hard to make sure that doesn't happen. And let's say Congress doesn't come up with a plan by the end of December next year and sequestration goes into effect January 1, 2013. Federal employee pay and benefits may have been spared, but you know what those cuts are going to mean for agencies? There's going to be more reductions in force, more layoffs, more early outs offered. So you may escape it on the pay side, but you could find yourself out of a job.
Well, you know, I was thinking just strictly from a political survival standpoint, which is what many people on the Hill, as you well know, do. If they do something, whatever they do, they're going to anger a particular group of constituents.
Right.
If they do nothing, which they're extremely good at, if they let the elections come and go and whatever happens, and let sequestration take place, it would seem to me that from a purely cynical viewpoint, but maybe pragmatic, that the smartest thing for them to do is nothing.
Well, you know, it really all depends on how you look at it, because, you know, we in the federal community probably would have liked to have seen something come from the super committee, because at least that meant, you know, while it may mean a hit for federal employee pay and benefits, it could also mean, you know, that the American people are still getting the services they deserve. These cuts go into effect in every customer service-driven federal agency, Social Security, IRS, VA. If you're waiting for services from one of those agencies, you're going to be out of luck, because they're going to have to get rid of staff, and that means that services to the American people are going to be delayed.
Well, you hear that the Border Patrol will suffer, tax collection will suffer, a variety
everything,
of things.
Everything.
So, but wouldn't it be possible, for instance, for Justice to say, okay, we're going to leave the Border Patrol alone, and we're going to cut back on something else in the field or even in Washington? I mean, isn't that possible?
It's certainly possible, and it's going to all be how the agencies handle the budgets that they're given from Congress. The problem with that is that programs still need to get done. Jobs still need to get done. And just because, you know, your workforce may decrease, it doesn't mean that job's going to be, you know, isn't going to get done, because it has to, because it's mandated by Congress. And when Clinton did this in the mid-1990s, you know, we're still studying the effects of that now. Ultimately, they ended up hiring hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of contractors to do the work, because just because you get rid of the workforce doesn't mean the work goes away.
Yeah, well, the contractors, I guess the beauty of them is, in theory, they can be terminated when whatever their services they're performing are no longer needed. But I guess a lot of this is a bookkeeping thing. They don't appear on the salaries and expenses accounts.
Yep. And they don't, when you go to FedScope, they don't appear as an employee of that agency. So then you can say, we decrease the federal government by 200,000 positions, and oh, by the way, I'm not going to tell you that I hired 200,000 contractors to do those jobs.
Yeah, I have seen, I think the Brookings Institution some years ago estimated that for every federal worker, there were 6 contractors in some agencies, and I think they were talking about NASA and energy in particular.
Oh, yeah, and I think, you know, Army just came out that they're cutting almost, I think it's 10,000 positions. They're going to offer early outs. And, you know, I've talked to our members at Air Force who have been offered early outs. But, I mean, they're 55, you know, 54 years old.
Yeah, somebody's got to do it.
They're not ready to give up. You know, they want to keep working. They believe in the jobs that they do. And this is, I mean, even if you take the pay and benefits discussion out of it, the morale at these agencies are so low.
Yeah. Jessica, thank you so much for being with us. We'll call you back. Keep fighting the good fight. And we'll be right back after a station break.
Thanks, Mike.
GoGecko with a little hello to all you federal employees. Now, in government, there are people on all points of the political spectrum, but there is one thing that everyone agrees on. Saving money is good. Which brings me to the big news. GEICO offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. It don't matter if you're a Democrat or an aristocrat, left wing, right wing, or a chicken wing. If you're a federal employee, GS7 or above, you could be saving a lot of money on your car insurance by switching to GEICO. So no matter if you're blue or red or, in my case, green. If you're a federal employee, GS7 or above, contact GEICO and see how much you could save. Isn't that right, Mike?
Exactly right, my little green friend. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. And like the gecko said, discounts are available for most federal employees, GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The General Services Administration wanted to host web videos to help members of the public get answers to frequently asked questions about the federal government, so they turned to the public to make the videos. GSA held a contest telling people they could make 30 to 90 second informational pieces based on the information at answers.usa.gov. Out of about 50 entries, GSA picked the five best and awarded a $1,000 prize to each winner.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
If you are facing advanced illness or the end of life of a loved one, peace of mind is in short supply. Fortunately, pain-free comfort care is available from the Washington Home and Community Hospices, a not-for-profit organization with a holistic team of doctors, nurses, caregivers, social workers, chaplains, and volunteers. The team comes to you in your home or wherever you call home in D.C., Montgomery, or Prince George's County. For your peace of mind, call them day or night for a complimentary consultation at 866-234-7222.
Federal News Radio is a proud partner of FEA, the Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund. In the past 25 years, FEA has helped more than 21,000 federal families with over $18 million in aid. By donating just $1 per pay period, you can help federal families keep the lights on, clean up after a natural disaster, or send a kid to college. Keep your CFC dollars in the federal family and make your pledge to FEA 11185 today. Learn more at FEA.org. That's FEEA.org.
What Facebook has done, they're transforming advertising. With Google click-through, you don't really know who's clicking through. But with Facebook, you can so specify who's looking at your ads that it's extremely targeted. That's why Google is so worried, because Facebook has created this closed ecosystem. They don't allow Google search into their little private kingdom. And Google is afraid that the Facebook community will become larger than Google's.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
As we're being bombarded with holiday ads showing beautiful models and products, do you ever wonder how real the photos really are? In the digital age, photos are more easily manipulated than ever. Maybe you're okay with being slightly fooled, say by adding a bit of color to a model's face, but not with
more significant alterations like removing 30% of a person's body mass.
Hani Farid, a computer scientist at Dartmouth College, has engineered a new tool that can tell how noticeably a picture changes from the original.
The technical part builds a mathematical model for how a photo is retouched. And then we asked human observers to look at the images and rate them on a scale of 1 to 5.
Farid's system, which relates the human and digital data, could help consumers and even photo manipulators, because it's easy to even accidentally go up that scale very quickly.
You're sitting in Photoshop and you make one small change and another small change and another one, and pretty soon you're looking at a picture of a Barbie doll.
More at nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. Just had a nice discussion with Jessica Clement of the Federal Managers Association. Now we're going to go to the other side of the coin and be talking with our Federal Times team. Steve Losey is up. Steve, are you with us?
I'm here. How are you?
Hey, good. Thanks for being with us. I don't know where to begin, but I've been sort of making fun of people this last decade who year after year predict the retirement tsunami, and it hasn't happened. In fact, retirements have dropped, and then lo and behold, you start crunching some numbers and things are changing.
Yeah, it certainly does look that way.
I got some stats from OPM on the number of retirement applications they got over the last 2 years, and there was a noticeable spike in retirement applications in October. In October, there were more than 11,000 applications. That's a 42% jump over October 2010 and a 60% spike over October 2009. And when I crunched some further numbers for the January to October, the first 10 months of 2011, there were 92,000 retirement applications, which is a 24% jump over the first 10 months of 2009. So if it continues at this rate, we could see more than 104,000 people, federal employees, apply to retire by the end of the year.
And the normal in recent years has been what?
Normally, it generally fluctuates between 74,000 and 90-some thousand.
Yeah, that is a jump. Well, it was one of these. I remember when I first started in the newspaper business, various columnists and pundits were writing about J. Edgar Hoover, and they kept saying every year they'd say he was going to resign or retire or be kicked out. He fooled them. He died in office, 15, 20 years after the speculation started. And we knew that someday the tsunami had to hit simply because people will be too old to walk into the office and or get around. So that's happening. Now, if I'm a federal worker who's recently retired, say the last year, and I'm still not getting a full annuity because of the backlog at OPM, or if I'm a Fed who's talking about retiring this month, as many people do, retire at the end of the year or by January 3rd, better have some money saved up, huh?
Yeah. The Office of Personnel Management has been trying to tackle this whole problem of delayed annuities for years and hasn't had a whole lot of luck fixing the problem once and for all. So yeah, people should expect to have at least 6 months or so of a partial annuity, maybe half or so, to try to kind of make sure they can pay their mortgage, keep food on their table. The Office of Personnel Management is saying that they're getting about 90% or so of the pensions to new retirees now, but there are some people who are very skeptical of that. Some of the groups who track this very closely say we're not seeing any significant improvement of the kind that OPM is describing.
Well, and in financial terms too, that's sort of like saying 90% of the people weren't struck by lightning during the last storm. But if you're one of the 10%, it's an absolute tragedy.
That's true. That's true.
Okay. The transit subsidy, this is one of these things that seems to come and go. What is the transit subsidy now, and what's the status of it?
The transit subsidy is a benefit that federal employees now receive. It is currently about $230, which is equal to the amount federal employees receive to cover their parking costs. But it's going to drop back down to $120 January 1st. Now, the National Treasury Employees Union and other employee groups are pushing Congress to renew this benefit, this mass transit benefit, but Congress hasn't stepped on it yet. So there's bills from Senator Chuck Schumer and Representative Jim McGovern that would fix this and extend the higher mass transit benefit, but we still haven't seen Congress move on it yet.
Well, I guess the vast majority of people who read the Federal Times and the vast majority of the people who read and or listen to Federal News Radio are either members of the federal family or contractors, but they're sort of involved in it. But that said, we get a lot of comments from people who apparently don't work for the government who know about this, and they say this is outrageous that federal workers get $230 a month to come to work. I don't get anything to come to work except fired if I don't.
Yeah, that's certainly a legitimate argument. The flip side of that is that a lot of federal employees, at least federal employees in the D.C. area, they work in Washington, D.C., and parking in Washington, D.C. is not cheap. And so if you're going to drive into D.C., it's going to cost you several hundred dollars a month to park there in the city. And the argument is that if you give people a higher benefit for parking than you give them to take the metro train, that's just going to encourage people to drive, and that's going to put a whole lot more cars on the road, contribute to traffic congestion, which, as you know, living in the D.C. area is just abominable, and contribute to pollution. So the goal of this higher benefit is to encourage people to take the metro train, get cars off the road, and hopefully reduce pollution and traffic congestion in that way.
Well, I know various surveys recently have shown that we have the worst traffic jams in the nation, worse even than the Los Angeles area,
yeah.
And we have the rudest drivers in the area, which I can attest to.
Yeah, I believe it.
Coming in. The tough problem. The continuing resolution, the most recent one, expires Friday.
Sean's been tracking this a lot closer.
Okay.
I think he'd probably be able to tell you a lot more.
All right, good. I'll ask him. Well, Jessica Clements said that, and she, it was very brave of her, because lobbyists are paid to put on a good face before their members. But, bad news, even though people don't like to hear it, is a warning and whatnot. And she said she was very pessimistic for federal workers the remainder of this year and next year because of the sequestration and the likelihood that it's easier to do nothing and maybe more politically expedient for members of Congress, particularly in the House, to do nothing than to do something that'll anger somebody before the election.
Yeah, federal employees are kind of a juicy target for lawmakers who are trying to cut the deficit or find ways to pay for various programs. Right now, the big thing is this whole payroll tax cut extension that President Obama says is necessary. The Republicans in both the House and the Senate are trying to pay for this payroll tax extension by freezing federal pay for anywhere from 1 year to three more years. Just last night, the House passed their bill that would have a one-year pay freeze extension and it contains several cuts, major cuts to federal retirement programs. That bill, however, it doesn't really have much chance at all of surviving. President Obama threatened to veto it. The Senate Democrats are not going to pass it. So that bill in particular is not going to pass. But just the fact that the Republicans keep coming back to the pay freeze issue and hitting it time and time again shows that one way or another, sooner or later, it's going to be enacted in law.
Yeah, well, is the pay freeze really the issue? Because extended pay freeze. Because the White House actually proposed the 2 year pay freeze that we're in the midst of now. It was better than the 3 years proposed by the Bowles-Simpson Commission, but they still did 2 years. So, are Democrats in the Senate? I mean, some people think this is politics on both sides, that both are counting on a failure and counting on the fact that once there is a failure, once nothing happens, they can somehow blame the other side.
Oh, of course. It's a big game of chicken going on. Everyone's expecting the other side to blink. But, yeah, the White House did enact a two-year pay freeze, and some of the people I've spoken to at AFGE say they were told that right up until the last minute when they announced the two-year pay freeze, they were planning on a three-year pay freeze. And some Democrats, Steny Hoyer of Maryland, said that he's expecting, said that supercommittee's failure makes a third year of the pay freeze more likely. Just the other day, Senator Joe Lieberman, who is an independent but was a Democrat and caucuses with Democrats, said he told reporters that you should probably expect for a third year of the pay freeze. So, all signs are pointing to at least some further pay freeze.
Have you guys crunched any numbers to see what an extra pay freeze would mean for people? Let me ask you that when we come back from break here on 1500 AM.
Sure.
This is John Gilroy from Federal Tech Talk. I've done over 200 interviews here on Federal News Radio, but many listeners still ask, yes, John, but what does your company do? Well, my company is called Armature. For the past decade, we have worked with organizations to help improve the way they collect data. You may call it comprehensive data collection, data analysis, or even outcomes measurements. If your agency has any problems with collecting, analyzing, or displaying data, then please visit our website at armaturecorp.com. We can help.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Hey, Eagles fans, tickets to all American University men's and women's basketball home games in Bender Arena are on sale now. Get them online 24/7 at AUEagles.com or by calling the Athletic Ticket Office at 202-885-TIXX. That's 202-885-TIX. Make your plans now to be part of another historic season in Bender Arena. Catch the Eagles' next home game Saturday, January 7th versus Colgate at 2 p.m.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school. Beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma. Or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
And now, the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
When there's an emergency in the D.C. area, whether natural or man-made, who is in charge? Senators raised this question during a hearing about how the federal government coordinates with local municipalities, especially if agencies shut down. D.C. is considered the nerve center of the government's emergency responders, but everyone is working with tighter budgets. Lawmakers want to make sure they're as efficient as possible. I'm Amy Morris.
These are hard times for federal employees. A multi-year pay freeze, rumors of furloughs, and discussions on reducing benefits are the realities that all federal employees face. Now more than ever, it's important to find ways to save your hard-earned money. One way is with life insurance from WEPA. WEPA offers lower rates and a premium refund policy that's returned over $58 million to its policyholders since 1996. To learn how much you can save, visit waepa.org. Once again, that's waepa.org.
Hey, it's the Geico Gecko. Now, as a federal employee, you're probably one for a smart presentation, so I've put together some charts and graphs here. There you go. That will help illustrate the money you could save by switching to Geico. First thing you'll notice is that Geico offers discounts to most federal employees, GS7 or above. Now, this is big news. But that shouldn't come as any surprise from a car insurance company that has been serving government employees since 1936. And as you can see on this graph here, it's probably why we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. Yeah, no, I do actually realise you can't see these, but trust me, they're rather impressive. Especially the 97% customer satisfaction rate. And when you consider it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more, well, all you GS7 employees or above should just contact Geico. Tell them, Mike.
Hey folks, this is Mike Causey, and the Gecko said it best. Most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above, could get a discount on their car insurance. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few. The proud. The Marines.
The Department of Defense faces some big changes in the coming years. I'm Federal News Radio's DoD reporter, Jared Serbin. We help you track those changes every Wednesday afternoon from 2 to 3 with On DoD. Each week, we'll talk one-on-one with defense experts and senior managers about the policies, programs, and innovations that affect warfighters and how the military will continue to meet its mission. That's On DoD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Call Causey. Welcome back to your turn. Talking with Steve Losey from the Federal Times. Steve, just a quickie question. I know you're not psychic, and we're both math challenged, but various people have told me, and I'm sure they've told you, that if their pay is frozen for another year, or maybe even if it isn't, they're going to retire because of their high three is not moving up, or if it is, only by in grades. Have you guys crunched any numbers to say what this two-year freeze has cost or will cost federal workers and what a third year would mean?
The two-year pay freeze is expected to save about $5 billion. I believe when the Obama administration proposed it, the latest third year of a pay freeze, the Congressional Budget Office scored the House bill that was passed last night and predicted that over a decade, the next decade, extending the pay freeze for one more year would save $1.8 billion, which you could also say would cost federal employees $1.8 billion. The National Treasury Employees Union did a little number crunching recently and said that if you assume that the pay raise would be 1.6% in 2013, that would cost an employee making $50,000 about $800 a year.
That's right, and compounding works both ways if
exactly.
they don't.
Yeah.
Steve, thank you very much for being with us. We're going to turn to your colleague now, Sean Riley.
Okay.
Thank you. Hi, Sean, are you there?
I'm here, Mike. How are you?
The magic of electronics. This is great.
Amazing.
Listen, it's interesting stuff going on here. The Postal Service, it's shutting down. It's not shutting down. What's going on?
Well, I think you saw the Postal Service at least temporarily surrender to mounting congressional pressure on its plans to significantly downsize, to shrink the number of post offices and processing plants. Last Friday, 20 senators, led by Bernie Sanders of Vermont, who's an independent, then joined by 19 Democrats, sent a letter to congressional leaders asking them to include a freeze on all rural post office closings, processing plant closings, any potential shift to from 6 to 5 day delivery in the omnibus spending bill that could be voted on this week. I think as a result, there was speculation that the leadership was going to go along with that. As a result, the Postal Service yesterday announced that it's putting a 5 month freeze in effect on all post office and processing plant closings. In the meantime, the Postal Service says it's going to continue with the study process on which plants will be closed, which post office could be closed. And so it may not have that big an effect at this point, but it does at least accede to congressional demands that the Postal Service give Congress a chance to come up with a fix that might not involve such, loss, rural communities losing their post offices or, and processing plant closing, processing plants closing and eliminating a lot of jobs.
I heard somebody the other day say, and I did not know enough about it to chime in, but they said that actually the Postal Service can't close a post office without the permission of Congress. Is that true?
I don't think so. I mean, there is an appeals process that communities can pursue, that, but that involves going to the Postal Regulatory Commission. I'm positive they do not. The Postal Service does not need congressional permission to close an individual post office.
Yeah.
Congress could, of course, use the appropriations process or some other means to block closing of a post office, but I don't think the Postal Service needs to go to Congress and ask permission every time it wants to close.
Well, that was my understanding why they had quote postal reform,
mm-hmm.
was to take that out of the political realm.
Yeah.
You and I were at the speech the other day where the Postmaster General spoke, and I believe he said that they had a couple of thousand post offices that made less than $1,000 a month, mm-hmm. something like that, but it cost them $60,000 a month to
mm-hmm.
run them.
Yeah, they have. The Postal Service last year said that basically 80, if you look at post offices on the basis of how much they cost to run versus how much revenue they bring in, Postal Service said last year that 80% are unprofitable.
Do you have a vision for where the what the post office is going to look like in 5 years?
I think the only thing anyone could say is that it's going to be smaller. It will have a smaller footprint, and the freeze that the Postal Service announced yesterday essentially is, I think, kind of a holding action. But short of a massive injection of new revenue, and I don't think anyone has any idea where that could come from, or some significant taxpayer assistance, there's simply no way it can continue on the course it's been going, where it's losing billions and billions of dollars every year.
Well, I heard a number of people who do humorous commentary on various things, and a number of them jumped on this Postal Service plan to, in effect, slow down service, or at least not promise to deliver as quickly as they do now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's part of that's going with this downsizing effort, and it's, the Postal Service, they've asked for an advisory opinion from the Postal Regulatory Commission on this. It's non-binding but required. And the Postal Service's argument essentially is, that it will slow down delivery of first-class mail. The standard now is 1 to 3 days. This change would move that to 2 to 3 days. But the Postal Service says, their argument is, look, people are using first-class mail less and less. They are resorting to electronic bill paying. They are sending invitations by Evite. They're sending electronic greeting cards. And first-class mail simply isn't going to be the revenue generator that it has been. And as a result, we need to essentially shrink the network that processes that mail to make it more efficient, even if that results in a slowdown in delivery time.
And yet it looks like by doing that, they would maybe accelerate the decline in first class and the number of people that use it.
That's true, and I think if you push them, they would acknowledge that. But their argument is that it's going to decline anyway. And as we heard the Postmaster General say at that speech, their main goal right now is getting ahead of the cost curve, is cutting costs fast enough so they can keep up with the decline of revenue, and essentially at least put the Postal Service on an even footing, financially, if not make it profitable again.
If I was a 48-year-old postal worker with 13 years of service, which I think is kind of right in the middle there of their workforce, should I be nervous?
Yeah, I think so. And I think they are. I think a lot of people in that bracket are nervous. The union contracts all have no layoff protections for folks who have been in the system for a while. But the Postal Service is seeking congressional permission to essentially abrogate those agreements and give the Postal Service basically, I think, the same kind of flexibility most private companies have when it comes to managing their workforces. Congress at this point isn't inclined to go along with that. I certainly don't think it's going to happen next year, but who knows what could happen after that. And again, it all comes down to the Postal Service being able to operate in the black.
I heard a discussion, and I didn't join in the post office the other day, and two of the staff people, clerks, I assume, were talking about the Postal Service's desire to set up its own retirement system to get out of the FERS and CSRS program, mm-hmm. and to also set up a health their own health plan. And I know Walton Francis, who, as you all know, is the mm-hmm. the world's leading authority on the federal employee health program.
Absolutely.
He said he doesn't see how they could set up a health plan that would be as good as the one they have now, for one reason, the pool would be smaller, mm-hmm. but also that postal workers are older mm-hmm. than the general population in the federal government.
Yeah, I think he's right on all counts. And also, I think another point is they have a higher injury rate, that's more workers' comp issue. Mm-hmm. I presume it would be a factor in terms of it setting any premiums. And that's, I think, why that proposal has yet to gain any traction, because the Postal Service, the Postmaster General has said that it would save the Postal Service money on its overall, but they have yet to really spell out how this would work, how they could show that it would be a better deal for the Postal Service, while at least continuing to provide some, an adequate level of health coverage for its employees.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine, and I'm not being flippant, but how they could save money on the health program and yet provide people the the same or even better benefits than they have now?
Well, I think it's the implied bottom line here is that probably employees would not get better, but, you know, would probably the benefits would probably be worse when measured by the extent of coverage or by what you'd have what they'd have to fork out in copays or deductibles. I mean, presumably that'd be one reason why it would be cheaper than going through the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program. And again, I think that's why you're getting a lot of resistance from unions and skepticism from Congress.
Well, I guess the message is for federal postal employees is be very nervous. And we leave them with that thought. Thank you, Sean Riley, for visiting with us. We'll talk to you guys next week. Everybody, have a good week and stay healthy.